Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome you to another special edition of Africa on the Move. It's a show dedicated to be a voice for the voiceless. It's dedicated to serve underserved communities and oppressed communities throughout the world. Tonight, we're going to define some issues and stand behind them. We want to have a discussion with the community on news that you can use. That's our theme tonight. It's on news that you can use. And with us tonight, our special guest is Brother Haki. He'll be giving his analysis on these upcoming events. And we'd like to have your feedback later on. In fact, dial in at 323-679-0841. 323-679-0841. First and foremost, right now, we can go to our guest, Brother Haki. We'd like to welcome you to Africa on the Move. Welcome, Brother Haki.
Thank you, Brother Africa.
Good. We're going to have a general topic where we're going to talk about news that we can use. And one of the most, hot issues that is going on today is the issue around the so-called whistleblower, Mr. Snowden, and the NSA, and its ratification as relates to U.S. interests and the interests of people in the United States and throughout the world. I first would like for you just give a general overview on how do you view this whole incident that just occurred, where he revealed to the whole world that the National Security Agency has a plan in which they can spy on people globally all throughout the world. But more importantly, they are spying on U.S. citizens. What's your general take? What are some of the things we need to look at in terms of what's going on with this particular phenomenon?
Okay. Well, I think the first thing, this question with respect to whether or not Snowden is a quote-unquote a traitor. I think one of the things that for most people in America, we realize intimately that, in fact, the government's been spying on our communications for a long, long time. So there's a notion that what Snowden espoused is new, as far as I'm concerned, is very esoteric. In fact, that because we always know that, it didn't come as a great surprise that, in fact, that the U.S. government is spying on the U.S. citizens and the world as well. Now, one of the things is that when you just look at generally, and this is a thing that a lot of people allude to, is when you look at the general technology in terms of the ability, you know, to actually listen in on people's call, this is something that is quite impossible as a result of the the Internet, so Internet queries. It allows people, you know, to in fact, you know, tap into what other people are saying, what people are looking at, and so forth and so on. So just in terms of the framework, that we're very clear in terms of the ground or the framework exists to make it possible for people to actually, in this case, the government, to actually listen to what people are saying. Now, if you go back in the history, you know, if you go back into to the 80s, early 90s, the whole program, Project Echelon, was specifically for spying on citizens and in governments throughout the world. Now, this whole Posse Comitatus Act, the whole notion that the U.S. government, and specifically the NSA, has no right to spy on U.S. citizens, is something that at this point, no more. See, one of the things that people fail to understand is during the Patriot Act, when the Congress unanimously supported the whole act around Patriot Act, that in fact it gave the government carte blanche the right to in fact spy on people, and that's part and parcel of the Patriot Act. So I don't think anybody should be surprised that when you look at the Patriot Act, that you see that this stuff is in fact rationalized. One of the things that Obama says, he says we have a certain amount of transparency that exists in terms of this whole process. He alludes to the fact that you got a FISA court, which in fact the U.S. government has to go through before it spies on the citizens. But in fact, the Patriot Act has rendered the FISA courts null and void. And so the FISA courts is nothing more than a rubber stamp in which the government goes to and say, listen, we got 2,000 people we want to tap into their phones into their computers. And of course, the FISA court said, okay, go ahead. And inevitably, the question in terms of why you want to do that never gets asked, because the FISA court is nothing more than a rubber stamp. So it's not here to protect the interests of U.S. citizens, throughout the country. So the thing is that, again, since we capitulate, I don't think anybody's surprised in terms of, the government's desire to actually spy, on American citizens. It goes hand in hand with the economy. One of the things is that you can't continue to spend trillions of dollars, on defense spending and not think that the rest of the economy is going to be neglected and therefore it's going to impact on the feeling and aspirations of the people in the society. So in that context, you have to understand that all of us are de facto, we're enemies of the state, and so therefore the government has an active interest in terms of making sure they know what we're thinking, where we're thinking, how we're thinking, who we communicate with. So that's very, very important. So nobody should be deluded into believing that, in fact, that these freedoms that they allude to, these freedoms that are articulated by these pundits, are anything other than, a self-delusion. This is something that doesn't exist.
Based upon what you know in terms of about this individual Snowden and his rationale for leaking out the spy program, based upon what you know, how do you view him in general? Do you see him as a snitch? Do you see him somebody anti-American? Or do you see him as maybe an honest individual who came to some level of consciousness and felt like what the U.S. government was doing was not in the best interest of American people in particular and humanity in general? How do you view this? Because one of the things I find real fascinating in terms of this question was that if he should be viewed as an enemy to the state, he stated clearly in his own words that he has never leaked any information that directly would have exposed any of their activities in foreign countries. But the point he wanted to make was that he felt like it was morally wrong and unjust to spy on American citizens. So from that particular behavior, it doesn't seem like he was so much anti the government more so than anti the behavior of the government. And he wanted to create a climate where some kind of judgment could be weighed on if whatever they are doing is in the best interest of the so-called American people. How do you view him?
No, I think that one of the things that they allude to a lot is about the fact that he has a GED, and so somehow the GED discounts in terms of your ability to think. The GED is beside the question. I think what happens is that when you think about socialization in terms of how we're all conditioned, I think because he wasn't college educated, I think what happened was that he went into government working with NSA under the illusion that, in fact, freedoms were afforded to American people. Now, the last thing the U.S. government would do would actually spy on its people because, of course, the U.S. government, unlike other governments, is beyond this notion of this desire to spy on the citizens. I think once he realized, in fact, that was going on and he was part and parcel of part of that process, I think it shocked him to the core. I think what happened was that as a person of conscience, I think he felt compelled to come forward. Because I'm sure after believing these platitudes were so long and didn't find out that these are just platitudes, that none of this stuff is really exists, it made him feel perhaps maybe like a hypocrite. Mm-hmm. Here he is, you're working for the government on the behalf of the American people. You want those things that are good, those things that are beneficial to the American people, only to find out that, in fact, you are some nemesis of the American people. That, in fact, your operation or your function is to be a service of adversary or enemy of the American people. I think for him, I think it was problematic. So I think that prompted him to actually, expose, in fact, what was going on. Now, the thing, I think, one of the side consequences of his actions, I think, is that a lot of governments around the world, who realize, and you talk about China, Russia, who are vividly aware in terms of U.S., cyber programs which attack their systems, who are intimately aware of the government's, spying in the country, just never had any definitive proof that, in fact, this was happening. Theoretically, they understood it was happening, but they had no definitive proof that, in fact, the U.S. government was spying on them. So I think, as peripheral concern, I think by Snowden articulating, and in fact, this is what they're doing, that was the concrete proof that countries around the world need, and in fact, the government, U.S. government was spying on its people. So I think when you talk about characterizing Snowden, you know, I don't characterize him as a traitor. I don't characterize him as a snitch. I don't characterize him as anything. I think, in fact, just in terms of the truest expression of patriotism, which is to question power when it is doing wrong, I think is what American citizens are supposed to do. So I think in that context, I see him as somewhat heroic in the sense that, you know, because he's going to pay a price for, you know, out in the government. There's no doubt about that. But I think just in terms of raw courage, you got to give the man a lot of credit, a lot of kudos in terms of actually, you know, coming out and providing, giving out this information. After all, it would have been so much easier to simply not do anything and just continue to make lots of money, you know, and live your life. But this just goes to show you that not all people out here are lacking in conscience. We got this perception that because people work in the government, that they lack perception or they lack consciousness. That's not true. There are individuals. I mean, there are individuals in the government who leak information all the time in terms of things that are very, very wrong. And I would venture to say that one of the things a lot of your listeners probably don't realize is that starting in the 1990s, they installed chips in every TV over 18 inches in diameter. So it affords the government the opportunity to look into your house. So while you're looking at television, they can look inside your house to see what's going on. And most people still don't even realize that. It's because people inside the government who leaked that information made it possible for people on the outside to get a glimpse in terms of the kind of things, the kind of travesties that are really going on under the name of democracy. So I think the man, you know, is rewarded for what he did, and irrespective of his education level, irrespective that he dated a hooker, all those things are really irrelevant. What is more important is that, you know, he's making it clear to people that this facade of freedom and justice is something that you have to take a closer look at in terms of assessing whether or not, in fact, we are free and we do have liberty.
Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to pause for a cause. We'd like to let our listeners know that when we come back, we are taking phone calls. Our line is 323-679-0841. Calling at 323-679-0841. Tonight we are discussing news that we can use. Right now we are talking about Mr. Snowden and the NSA and this whole question of domestic spying at home and abroad. So we're going to go to the station break, and when we come back, we're going to take our first caller. Let's go to the station break, and we'll be back. You are listening to Africa on the Move with your host, Brother African. All right, we're coming back from our break. We was on our pause for the calls. And what we're going to do right now, we're going to our first caller, caller 8488. Welcome to Africa on Your Move. Give us a news that you can use. If you want to make a statement about the spy case, deal with the NSA, you're welcome to it, or you can share with our audience. What's on your agenda in terms of the news that we can use? Go ahead, caller 8488. Hello, caller. Call 8488. Last four numbers, 8488. Question or comment, please. Okay, I guess we'll come back to that caller. Brother Haki, let's continue. One of the things I noticed in terms of the spy issue and domestic spying, there are a lot of American citizens believe that if you're not doing nothing, they don't see no problems with that. What is the implication of that kind of attitude? How do you respond to that kind of attitude, Brother Haki?
Well, that kind of attitude, unfortunately, serves the interests of those in government who want to undermine our rights. One of the things is that it's not a question in terms of what you do and don't do. It's a question of being able to live your life in a way which is not intrusive, a way in which you don't have to worry about people listening to what you have to say. And on the flip side of that, we have to understand, if the people got the technology or the desire to actually spy on what you're saying, then they also have the opportunity and the know-it-all to actually set people up based upon information they heard over telephone. So the very, very dangerous thing. So the mere fact that he's not doing anything is not the question. The question is that do you have a fundamental right based upon the U.S. Constitution in terms of life, liberty, and happiness? And I maintain that those things that are in opposition to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness are things that we have to question, and particularly as America, which proudly claims, cover the banner in terms of, you know, being, you know, proud of our liberties and our freedoms. Now, when these kind of things happen, obviously there are repercussions. And I think the repercussions for everybody, irrespective of what you're doing or don't do, are very, very dangerous. It creates a precedent in which, you know, not only can you set people up based upon what you heard, but you can actually carry out that, and you can actually imprison, have assassinated, lock up large people simply on based upon information on something that you heard, which it may or may not have any relevance in terms of, you know, in terms of any case that may be facilitated. But the bottom line is that you've got to be concerned about that kind of intrusion, that kind of power, and so that's the thing that people have to be concerned about.
Again, we'd like to let our callers that can call in. The lines are open. The line is open there at 323-679-0841. We can try one more time to our caller. The last four numbers is 8488. Let's try one more time. See if they're there. Caller, are you there? Africa on the move. Caller, any questions or comments? Guess our caller has nothing said. We will continue to carry on our conversation. All right, Brother Haki. You stated something real earlier in your presentation that the government has a tendency to view its citizens as potential terrorists or as terrorists. Can you just explain a little bit more on that?
Well, I think you have to understand, you know, in the context of this capitalist society and the capitalist system, that you understand that, you know, money makes the world go round, and it's all about money. It's not about principles, it's not about honesty, it's not about integrity, it's about money. And unfortunately, there are those who take the position that giving the wealthy everything they want is beneficial to the society or to the economy. In fact, nothing can be further from the truth. In fact, the more money you give to the wealthy, the less money you have to give to others. Now, it's important to give money to the others. I'm talking about your middle income or poor people. Because the circulation of money is very important. You have the multiply effect in terms of money circulating, create money, so you create wealth. So it's very, very, very important. The second thing to remember is that 70% of economy, GDP, is consumer spending. If you take the money out of the hands of the people who spend it, which is poor people, middle-income people, then you undermine the economy. So the economy deteriorates. The economy descends. And so, therefore, because they recognize that we all become enemies of the state, because we all need food, we all need shelter, we all want our kids educated. And when the government can't meet those demands, then it facilitates a great deal of anger. And the anger in the U.S. is growing leaps and bounds, as it is throughout the world, as you see, you know, in Spain, Italy, Portugal, and other places where people are suffering from austerity programs in which they feel there's no future. And the same is true in the United States, in which people increasingly feel there's no future. And so there are a lot of angry people out here. And then superimposed upon that is a situation where you got all these people arming themselves with guns, with ammunition and weapons, stockpiling ammunition and weapons. The question is, why are they buying all these ammunition and weapons? Clearly, these groups are planning on at some point taking on the federal government. Now, the federal government is not naive in terms of, you know, this kind of phenomenon that's taking place in society. And so, therefore, they understand that these people constitute a direct threat. Now, as related to the African-American community, or the African community, that Africans are perceived as a threat anyway, simply because the history of slavery, the history of colonialism, the history of oppression, the history of marginalization that exists, that African people are perceived as enemies anyway, because we are more impacted by the injustice that pervades society. And so therefore, even though we do nothing, we are perceived as enemies simply because of our conditions that we live under. And so therefore, people have to understand, whether you want to understand it or not, that de facto speaking, you are an enemy because you constitute a threat by virtue of not having anything or not having large sums of money. So you become a threat to the government.
Okay, Brother Ike, we've got a little less than 10 minutes. I would like to go to another area, but it's directly related. Let's talk just a little bit about this whole question, this concept we call the illusion of democracy. Recently, the Supreme Court made a decision where the Voting Act of 1965, I believe section number 5 of that, they basically did away with that, in which now it allows states like in Texas, which I just recently done, to be able to create identification cards to vote. So if you don't have an identification card, they can use as being discriminate against people from voting. Give me your take on the recent decision by the Supreme Court and its implication.
Well, it's an interesting case, because one of the things that Chief Roberts, in making his decision in terms of, scrapping parts of the Voting Rights Act, he didn't give a legal reason in terms of why he's doing what he's doing. So it just goes to show that it's not so much about legality or law as is about politics. And so therefore, they realize that if the Republicans are to regain power, then one of the things that's very, very crucial to them is to undermine the black vote. Now, keep in mind, every eligible African in America doesn't vote. But Africans vote in such large enough number that they can influence outcomes in terms of elections. Mm-hmm. And so for the Republicans, it's important to neutralize those Africans in America who actually vote. And so this is just part of one of many strategies in terms of undermining the vote. Now, you alluded to Texas in terms of its voter register, IDs. Well, other states have other ways in terms of how they disenfranchise, African voters. I mean, you got to have a certain kind of ID. Any ID you want to do, it has to be a certain kind of ID, a state ID. So they have different kind of ways, methodologies that they employ in terms of making sure that African people don't vote. And so, therefore, it's one of those things in which, we got to be very, very concerned about. In fact, now, keep in mind also, Lee, brother African, is that one of the real ironic things is that people who have felony records in most states are stricken, are not allowed to vote anyway. So that in and of itself disproportionately impacts on the African community. And so therefore, if we are to believe that empowerment comes at the voting box, then we got to be very, very concerned about terms of lessening power or lessening numbers actually being able to participate in the process of voting. So if you're going to have a democracy, then it's on the very basis, then you got to have the people have to be right to vote. That's the very basis of democracy. After all, I'm talking about democracy to the extent that we talk about egalitarianism and we talk about the greatest good for the greatest number of people. Now, if you talk about democracy where the Democrats talks about democracy is for the few, for the powerful, for the rich, then that's a different ballgame. But if you're talking about democracy as it relates to egalitarianism, where it's the greatest good for the greatest number of people, then clearly you want your citizens, more your citizens to vote, not less.
Okay, now, a lot of you also say we are heading towards a role of trying to steal another way of, when you look at how they have scrutinized this particular legal system to allow states now to have the right to impose national identity cards, voting cards, we are heading toward a path of a national ID card. People have been fighting against that. What's the What's the positive and negative advantage of having national ID cards? What's the implications of that? Why would people be opposed to that, and why would people support that? Give me your take on it.
Well, I don't think national identity card serves any purpose other than the ability to track your citizens. I mean, that's the only purpose we really create. When you start to think about the autonomy of every state, then to have a national identity card sort of renders, you know, state autonomy or you know, as it pertains to 50 independent states, it sort of renders that concept null and void. So I don't see a reason in terms of why you have a national identity card. Now, keep in mind, we know what happened in South Africa with the national identity cards in terms of the movement of the large number of African people in South Africa in terms of ability, you know, not to move, to be controlled and to be heard. I don't think you want a situation in the United States where you're tracked and when you're told where you can go and you can't go based upon you and your card. So I think national identity cards are a very dangerous thing, but I do think that certainly it's plausible when you raise the question in terms of maybe that's what we're heading for, to get people comfortable with the idea of identity cards and then become the national identity card, which people won't ask the question, why? Does something go along with it? So I think that's a inherent danger, and you're right.
And also, I think it's also keep in mind with this whole immigration battle. This, again, is another attempt at how they can use it as a means to so-called kick out the so-called illegal immigrants, as they would call it. So it's clearly, it seems to be another attempt, a mean-spirited attempt, to not to look at what is in the best interest of all those who have made a contribution to the society. And I never did understand this question of what is a legal person, particularly when you look at the descendants of these people. Their foreparents were here prior before that was even the United States. So that's something I just want to add to it. In closing, Brother Aki, we have about 3 minutes. What I would like for you to take a stab at in general, just what is the overall tone of what's going on with the people? As relates to, particularly African people, as relates to the whole idea that the more we participate in this electoral process, the more mayors and governors we have, the more people we have involved in these political parties. We even now acquire a person who look African to be a president. We acquire all these things, and the assumption was that conditions would be better. Explain the dichotomy and why conditions are worse today than ever before.
Well, you know, African, is that Asian edge in terms of which is paramount? Is it economics or is it politics? And I always take the position that the problem for African people is one of politics. I think for most people in society, African people included, I think the issue is for them, I think it's probably economics. One of the things is that once you aspire for these offices, the whole idea is to gain as much as you possibly can. I'm talking about to gain as much as you possibly can. I'm talking about money or power, and that's the focus. The focus is not on injustice, not on suffering, it's not on inequality. It's not about any of that stuff. And so, therefore, the underlying theme is one of economics. So, therefore, if you think economics is the solution, then you think getting more and more money doesn't really solve the problem. In fact, the problems get perpetuated because the people in power who address a lot of these very quintessential issues never really take the time, you know, to even deal with these issues. In fact, they begin to understand that there's no real money in terms of addressing these issues. But keep in mind, when you address these very pertinent issues as it pertains to the masses of people in society, then those in power won't reward you, you know, by dealing with those issues. They will reward you, however, for corruption, greed, you know, collusion, those kind of things. They will, you got people like the Koch brothers, you know, people like that who would give you, I mean, hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, if in fact you wouldn't carry out that greedy, inhuman, you know, agenda. So I think we have to, the question in terms of politics and economics has to be struggled with in the African community, and we have to come to the realization at some point we have to have minds that we're conducive toward real change, and all we can do that is be a single mind, single thought, and begin to navigate our way through this insanity.
Okay, Brother Aki, we'd like to thank you for your contribution. We are out of time. We'd like to thank our listeners. We'd like to remind y'all that we come on a bi-weekly basis on Sunday evenings at 6 o'clock. Feel free to tune in on Africa on the Move at same time, same station. The next program will be July the 14th. We'd like to thank you for listening to our particular program today. The theme was on news that you can use. Until next time, Continue to organize, organize, organize. And remember, Africa is on the move.